ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 14, Text Number 56.
Vastuto janatam atra krishnam sthasno karnishucha bhagavad rupam akhilam nanyad vastav iha kinchana.
Translation and purport by the disciple of Srila Prabhupada. Those in this world who understand Lord Krishna as he is, see all things, whether stationary or moving, as manifest forms of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such enlightened persons recognize no reality apart from the Supreme Lord Krishna. Purport. Everything exists within Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna exists within everything. Still, the order of progression is always from the energetic to the expanded energy. Lord Krishna is the original identity from whom all other identities emanate. He is the supreme energetic from whom all categories and dimensions of energy become manifest. Thus, our personal bodies, self, family, friends, nation, planet, universe, and so on are all manifestations of the Supreme Lord, who expands himself through his personal potencies. Lord Krishna is certainly the supreme object of our love and attraction. And other objects such as body, family, and home should be secondary objects of our affection. Moreover, a close analytic study of the actual situation will reveal that even the secondary objects of love are also manifestations of Lord Krishna. The conclusion is that Lord Krishna is our only friend and object of love. In his Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada comments on this verse as follows. Without being an expansion of Krishna, nothing can be attractive. Whatever is attractive within the cosmic manifestation is due to Krishna. Krishna is therefore the reservoir of all pleasure. The active principle of everything is Krishna. And highly elevated transcendentalists see everything in connection with him. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is stated that a Mahabhagavat, a highly advanced devotee, sees Krishna as the active principle in all movable and immovable living entities. Therefore, he sees everything within this cosmic manifestation in relation to Krishna. Sukhdev Goswami, this most exalted Acharya and disciple of Srila Vyasadeva, is beautifully in this one simple yet instructive verse bringing us to the essence of Krishna consciousness. Actually, it's a very beautiful verse. And much thought process can go into understanding the depths which are there. The Bhagavatam itself is like an ocean of verses
is itself like a vast encyclopedia of transcendental knowledge. However, when you hear verses like these, then we can understand that each and every verse is like an ocean. Each and every verse, when the acharyas would speak on such verses, they would, I'm sure, be able to extract such depth of meaning. So beautifully it is said, the essence of everything is Krishna. How beautiful. This is the mood of the Paramahamsas. What is a Paramahamsa? Paramahamsa like is not a title which you just give somebody, as is given in our country. But Paramahamsa is a person who has this unique ability to extract essence of everything. One has the ability to extract the essence, the essential substance, the vital substance of everything in the world, material and spiritual, is a Paramahamsa. As we know, the Hamsa basically can extract from a combination of milk and water. It can extract milk, which is the essence. So, this is a very beautiful principle. We can try and expand on this thought process a little further. That yes, actually, even in our common experience, in everyday experience also, we usually actually we live by this principle actually. We live by this principle, honestly. When we eat food, all of us eat a variety of foods. Everyone in the world eats, ad infinitum type of foods. So everyone eats differently. Nonetheless, the body is designed in such a way to extract the essence of the food. Not everything which you eat actually goes into the body. It's not assimilated. Only essentials are extracted. Unessentials are eliminated. As stool and urine and sweat and breath. Right? So that we have excretory organs which are basically there to eliminate things which are not essential, which is not in any way substantial. So the body can actually extract. So we may eat various foods. That's how food is analyzed, in fact. You have varieties of things, and what is a high protein diet? Protein, right? So each and every protein is analyzed, the egg protein, the meat protein, the soya protein, and the mung protein, and the sprout protein, everything is analyzed. So which is a protein of high biological value? So that you can have maximum, which has got the maximum potency? Because the essence of a soya is the protein, right? The essence of paneer is its protein. The essence of a dal is its protein, which is the active principle there. Right? So the body is designed in such a way. When we look at a tree, we don't look at the tree actually. We look at our first sight goes to the flower or the fruit there. We don't start looking at the trunk first, like we look at Krishna, trunk first, and then the branch first. When you see like a tree and there's a lot of flowers, immediately the essence of the tree being the flower or the fruit, the eyesight goes to the fruit, isn't it? So we go to the essence. That's the way life is in fact created, to always go to the essence of everything. Even if we take a simple thing like the hair, hair is hair, but the active principle there is collagen, saliva. The active principle there is the digestive enzyme within the saliva, right? So everything actually has its active principle. The body is living. I mean, the body is of course dead, but it appears to be living, is because of the heart. The essence principle of the is, so when a person dies, he always gets a death certificate which says that he has a cardiorespiratory failure. Because he has a liver, he has a kidney, he has a brain, he has a skin, he has all his organs, but the heart is not functioning. The active principle has stopped being active, it has become inactive. So the person is declared dead. It's no longer active. The body is not moving. The essence of the body is the heart. But what makes the heart move is the soul. So the soul is the active principle of the heart as well. And what makes the soul the way it is? What makes the soul
possess life-giving properties to the heart? Krishna. Right? It is because of Krishna who is a source of all life in this creation. All life depends on him. And when a part of that spark of all life comes out as minute life, as a soul, and enters anywhere, it creates life. It animates that object. Even if it's a mountain, it can get animated. We are told it can fly. Because that one spark is there to make even a mountain fly. Imagine, a small spark, one thousand tape of the hair, and a huge mountain, which is millions of times bigger than an elephant, is flying in the air. Because of that one spark, which creates symptoms of life, even in a mountain. What a talk of life in whales and dolphins and like that. Right? So, wherever we see this, the active principle is there. So therefore, or for example, when you see look at fruits, now modern science is basically designed to look at active principles. The whole process of science actually is also the same, to look at active principles. We have different colors of fruits, for example. You have the blueberry, the strawberry, raspberry, and what are gooseberry, you know, so many berries. All are different colors, right? Beautiful colors. Raspberry is yellow, strawberry is pink, blueberry is blue. Why are these colors there? Because the active principle is there. It's called anthocyanin. It's the active principle which gives properties to those berries which are very important for the body. Or you have papaya and mangoes and carrots. The carotenoids are the active principle. Right? So in everything, modern science tries to understand, why is papaya the way it is? Why is mango the way it is? Why is blueberry so useful for the eye? Why is cranberry so good for the urine? Right? Because then they take out the active principle. Or a herb. There is a process of extraction. Right? They extract. What is extraction? Extraction is looking for the active principle in a particular herb. The whole herb is, you don't take the whole tree. And don't eat that whole tree. You don't make the whole tree into a bhuka, right? But you take the bark and you put into processes, dissolve the other things and take the essence and then put into a capsule form and take it. So in this way, life itself, the way we're living, is designed and oriented towards looking for active principles. But we do it very unconsciously, therefore we don't understand what's the principle involved. But actually looking for active principles, right? That's a fact. You're buying a bag or a briefcase or a chappal, you're looking for durability, which is active principle. Something which is durable, something which will last. Or a flower. We don't offer flowers to Krishna which are non-fragrant, because the fragrance is the active principle of a flower. So how a beautiful flower may look, we don't offer it to Krishna, because the active principle of fragrance is not there. But a small mogra or a small champa or a five-petaled parejata, which is a very teeny little thing, but it has so much fragrance. So the active principle of Krishna being there, that principle is offered to Krishna. So in everything there is essence. And devotees like ourselves who are sadhakas are being trained by the Srimad Bhagavatam and the Acharyas to live a life exclusively dedicated towards extracting essences of everything in this world. Why? So don't get attracted to the non-essentials, which are also there. But they are there to distract most of the time. An example I can give is of a marriage. A marriage is a very important ceremony in life, no doubt. Anybody knows. Without marriage, the society is in chaos. Right? Of course, even with marriage, it is in chaos, but still. But yeah, without marriage, it is more chaos, probably. But what is the essence of a marriage? I'm not talking about the marriage, I'm talking about the ceremony of marriage. Well, there is no printing of cards. You know, everyone who goes through a marriage, every parent who is here has married a son or daughter knows what is a marriage. Months of preparation. Months and months. Printing of cards, making lists, booking the hall, booking the caterer, booking the decorator, and you know, sending invitations around, and you know, making all the jewelry for this thing, buying all the saris, buying the suits, exact rings, the exact matching shoes. Oh my God, it's a whole big industry. But the essence is not all of this. The essence is the vows of marriage. The vows of marriage take only 3 minutes to take. Right? I don't know whether they even take vows these days, you know, in karmi marriages. At least devotee marriages, it's all about vows. But karmi marriage, I don't know. I have not attended a karmi marriage for many years now. So I've sort of been disconnected with karmi marriages. Because in our society has got marriages, and everywhere you go, the Guru Maharaj speaks or the senior Vaishnava speaks and tells you the essence of what this is all about. And the vows are taking. And the sacred fire is there, and the proper Brahman is there who creates a fire which is not just twigs and some, you know, matchstick and all that, but there is some mantras being chanted to sanctify that fire also. Right? So the essence is the vows. The other day, Radhana Maharaj was explaining this, that, you know, other things may be essential. It's not that there should not be a food. You know, vows are taken, okay, marriage ends here, Hari Bol, Hare Krishna, see you, thank you for coming, Prabhu. No, there's no prasad today. But there's vows are there, and there's also prasad. And the prasad or the food is the joy of the couple, the joy of the parents for having come here to give blessings to this particular child. The vows and the blessings are the main part of any marriage. The vow which the couple takes and the blessing which the gathered elderly people, the, you know, the close ones, the swajanas and all the sadhus and the devotees, the blessing which they offer is actually which makes marriage a sanctified activity. In it of itself, moving around the fire has got no meaning. It's like moving around a tree. What's the value of moving around a tree or a fire? Because fire is there in the wood also. Right? So move around a tree. So the fire is already there. Everyone knows wood contains fire. So we don't move around, trees. But there is a sanctified fire. Right? So the essence is the blessings and the fire which created by the sadhus. That is the essence of marriage. But then we get attracted to all the phantasmagoria around the marriage, right? How is the decoration? Oh, what food? Chinese is there, and this counter is there, that counter is there. But that's not the marriage part, actually. The essence is the vows and the blessings. Right? So that's the way we should be looking at life. Or when a devotee arranges a marriage, he should be looking at that part of the marriage as most important. If I'm getting married, I may be involved in the other thing, but I should look forward to how I'm getting absorbed in that ceremony of vows and receiving blessings of the house. I should be absorbed in that as a candidate who's getting married. Or if my parents are getting somebody else married, then they should look at that as the essence, rather than the other things. Other things may be there, but it's not the main thing. Or for example, you know, we are reading today Srimad Bhagavatam, and there are so many scriptures, we don't read all of them. All of them are scriptures. All of them are breaths of Brahma and coming from God himself. All of them are coming from Brahma's breath. All of them are coming from Krishna's flute. But we don't read all of them. But among all the scriptures, we read only the Gita and the Bhagavata. Well, Mahabharata we read, but we know the essence of the Mahabharata is the Gita. And all the scriptures are there, the Puranas, but the essence of the scriptures is the Srimad Bhagavatam. Or let's go further in our the same logic. We started from fruits and berries, and we're going a little deeper into the spiritual subject matters. We chant Hare Krishna mantra. Or for example, what is the essence of Mahaprabhu's movement? Right? Mahaprabhu's movement. Oh, there's so many things. Temples and scriptures and prasadam and festivals and Janmashtami and disappearance festivals and appearance festivals and oh, so many things. Mahaprabhu's movement is full of so many varieties of things. But the essence of Mahaprabhu's movement is Sankirtan. What is Mahaprabhu's movement without Sankirtan? There's no Sankirtan in our movement. There's no means to accept. No, there's no means to access Krishna himself. There's no means to access Krishna's grace. So this movement becomes practically like a dead movement. We need all these temples because there's no means to access Krishna. If you eliminate Sankirtan from Mahaprabhu's movement, it becomes non-viable movement. It cannot sustain. The life of Mahaprabhu's movement is Sankirtan. And the more there is Sankirtan, there is more vitality to the movement. Therefore, even the acharyas say, even if you don't build temples, don't worry. Temples are, well, essential for people to gather and have sick exchanges, but that's not the main thing. Like we have our base. There's no big temples, but the base is still a very powerful unit that people can gather and have Sankirtan, and that goes on. We don't have big structures, but the base is there. Nerul and, you know, Mira Road and various places, the base is there. Essence is Sankirtan. Even in the Sankirtan, the essence is what? chanting Hare Krishna mantra. And within that chanting Hare Krishna mantra also, there is essence, there is actually the devotee is so specific. Like your essence of the essence practically, going deeper and deeper and deeper. That means chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra is in itself not the main thing. It is the attitude of service and prayer which makes Mahamantra the way it is. All of us chant Hare Krishna mantra, but the devotee who is actually getting the maximum grace, the maximum power, the maximum mercy, the maximum benefit of the mantra, which is the most powerful of all mantras, and it benefits, of course, everybody who chants Hare Krishna mantra, no matter what, a parrot or anybody else, even the non-moving objects who hear. Thakur Haridas said that even when you chant Hare Krishna mantra loudly and there's an echo, that's the echo of the non-moving objects who are chanting Hare Krishna mantra. That's the relation of Acharya, right? So that at that level it's true. But as far as we are concerned, for us, the chanting is there, but the people who are getting the maximum benefit of the chanting are the people who are chanting with the essence of the Mahamantra is the desire to serve. The desire to serve Krishna with devotion and the desire to serve the world with love. These are the two most important benefits of chanting Hare Krishna mantra. There are two sides, the world and Krishna. So that's how the devotee orients his chanting towards. He wants to chant. He wants to worship the deities with love. He wants to make a garland of flowers with love. He wants to decorate Prabhupada's form with love. He wants to make a rangoli for Krishna's pleasure with love. He wants to put tilak on his body with love. He wants to cook in the Rajbhog with love. So all activities towards Krishna are to be done with a sense of devotional love. Because love is the very essence of bhakti. Bhakti is the essence of all yoga forms. There are so many of them. Raja Yoga, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Hatha Yoga. But of the essence of all yogas is bhakti. Without bhakti, there is all yogas become practically meaningless, except they just become some either mental intellectual gymnastics or physical exercises at best. But what makes a yoga into an important aspect of connecting to God is the bhakti element which is added to the yoga. Bhakti with Hatha Yoga is perfect. Bhakti with Jnana is perfect. But the essence of bhakti is love. Is love. So making a garland with love, or making earring with love, or speaking with love, or cooking rabadi downstairs with love. So we serve Krishna with loving devotion. And how do we deal with the world? A sahajya or an imperfect devotee or a prakrita bhakta can only deal apparently with Krishna in a particular way. Anything that is love. But he misunderstands or he is not still realized or is not mature enough to deal with the world. And a balanced devotee can do both. And you say Madhyamadhyakari is a balanced devotee. He is taught how to deal with Krishna as the sole object of worship, is it not? But he's also taught how to deal with the world, befriending the devotees, keeping away the envious, and reaching out to the ignorant masses. With what? With compassion. So dealing with Krishna with loving devotion and dealing with the world as instruments of compassion. That's where we deal with the two aspects of our life. Our life has two aspects. Dealing with Krishna and dealing with the world. Right? That's essentially our life. Whether a brahmachari or grihastha, it doesn't really matter. We have to deal with the Krishna and deal with the world. So if you understand these aspects of dealing with Krishna with love, singing kirtan with love, the holy names, breathing mrudanga with love for Krishna's pleasure. What do we say when we say with love means what? Is this just a sentiment? The sentiment there is the sentiment of giving pleasure. When something is done with a desire to give pleasure, it's a sign of love. I give this glass of milk as an expression of my love to give you pleasure of drinking this glass of milk. So milk is the substance, and the active ingredient of that milk is my desire to please you. Right? That essence is to please. Right? So in this way, the active principle of Krishna consciousness is can be beautifully understood by this beautiful, nice particular verse. The Mahamantra is a mantra, but the active principle is the Bija, the Hare, Krishna and Rama. Every mantra has its bijas with active principle. So in this way, when we understand this concept in a beautiful way, then we will not be attracted or distracted rather to the other thing which go along with the active principle. We will have to eliminate the non-essentials and take the essentials. And this particular verse, it also reminds us of how the great devotees function in this world. The Mahabhagavats, for example, because they're so tuned into Krishna. It's all a matter of tuning our consciousness. The word tuning and training are very similar. Tuning the consciousness is the same as training the consciousness. The other day I saw a video of a dog who is tuned or trained to dance to music. And for about half an hour, this dog and his trainer, his caretaker, his master is dancing in various fanciful ways. And the dog actually is dancing just like the, like the master. And exactly to the tune of the music being played. I couldn't believe this. It's a complex music being played with violin, I don't know what various instruments were there. And he's actually having the steps, which are just like, he's actually rhythmical with the particular music steps which are being played. Just like a Bharatanatyam dancer, he's tak, thai, tat, like that. So he also goes like that, exactly with the tune. And when music goes fast, he starts running and, but his step is never out of tune with the beats of the music. Even an intelligent dog can be trained. Even a dolphin can be trained. Even a wild lion can be trained in a circus. Right? Why can't the human consciousness be trained? Why can't we train when subhuman species can be trained so well? Snakes can be trained. Everybody can be trained. Why can't human beings be trained? And that's what the Guru does essentially, or at least he's trying to do that. He's trying to train his disciples' consciousness. What is the training? To tune into Krishna. This is the drama season going on right now. at least I'm involved to some extent in dramas. And the previous years we were doing a drama on last year on Mother Ladini, Legacy of Love. And when you sit in the train, you're sort of just looking at people but not really looking at them. You just like they're there, but they're not important for you. You're just looking at them. You're not really gazing at them. But then other time we saw an African person. And suddenly he became very attractive to us. Hey, African person, Negro. I started looking at his gestures. How does he talk? I was supposed to play that role of an African murderer, Prince Johnson. Suddenly that person's behavior became very important for me. And he was on the phone. And he was talking. Said, okay, this is his accent. Because, they talk like that, they're chewing their words. And they talk like that. They chew on their words. So he became very important. Why was he important for me suddenly? Because my consciousness was tuned into African speech. Suddenly, that person's speech became very relevant to me. Why would I care what he's speaking, He's speaking in his African native language. I don't even understand what his language is, Swahili or whatever it is. But, for him, it became very important for me. Because I was tuned into Africa at that time. I was tuned into Liberia. So Africans became very important for me. I was just going by the train, and then, you know, sometimes you go in the train and you know, suddenly you find that, you know, this person starts running with the train. You've seen that? He just starts running with the train. It works. And he's gazing at the luggage compartment. The moment he sees there's a big luggage in the luggage compartment, luggage compartments don't have windows. They don't have, you know, it's all open. You can see everything, right? So the moment he sees a big luggage there, some big bhajiwala is there, he knows this is his catch. And he's going to help that people to, you know, unburden the luggage from the train and carry it around from the platform. And he gets his money. So he's not looking at the whole train. He's looking, not looking at the beautiful ladies who are hanging around, whatever. He's looking only at the, you're looking like at the luggage compartment. He's tuned into that. And if the luggage compartment is empty, you know, he doesn't run because there's no. But it is full with all bhajiwalas and everything, all heavy loads. He runs with the train. So he has to get in the train first in that dabba. Because if he climbs in first, that becomes his quota to help, you know. So he's tuned in. When I saw this example, I said, wow, this guy is too much, you know. He doesn't look at the entire train, and we don't look at ever into a luggage compartment. I'll be looking, when is the first class compartment coming? Either I said, look, first class. Yeah, or second, whatever you enter. But he's looking only at the luggage compartment because he's tuned into the luggage compartment. Right? So in this way, we can tune our consciousness. It is something like a tune, an instrument. You tune a sitar. Anybody who plays an instrument knows it has to be tuned into something. You have a harmonium, you just don't have a raw harmonium. You have to tune the harmonium. You tune your violin to the beats you want. Everything has to be tuned in to emanate some particular sound vibration. So a materialist is tuned into his sense enjoyment. How does he tune his consciousness? He tunes his consciousness by looking at everything in the world in relation to him. Everything in the world is seen, heard, felt, experienced in relation to him alone. Because his false ego dictates that he is the most important person in this creation. He is God. Ishwaraham aham bhogi. And this Isha Mani, which is a disease of Indra also, and all of us, right? This Isha consciousness makes him see at the entire creation in relation to him alone. If somebody's cars get spoiled or gets burned or somebody's child drowns, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't relate to him. Or if his country is being attacked by the neighboring country, it concerns him because he's seeing his country, he's seeing the country in relation to him. And what is a devotee's consciousness tuned into? He sees everything, his consciousness tuned into, seeing everything, hear, see, experience, speak, live in relation to Krishna. Everything is seen in relation to Krishna. When Prabhupada looks at the ocean, he talks to his disciples, well, the scientists say you require hydrogen, 2 molecules, oxygen, 1 molecule for making a molecule of water, is it not? Saru Damodar Maharaj said, yes, true. Then how do you make the ocean? Who made the ocean? Some scientist has to put it in the laboratory and mix this tube with this thing and put electrolysis or whatever they use, electrodes, anodes, cathodes, whatever they use, and make a drop of water. So do you think there's this whole ocean which has millions of gallons of water has not been, you know, which laboratory has made this and who's the laboratory person and who has created this, mixed this hydrogen oxygen to make a whole Atlantic and Pacific oceans? Is God. That is God. So when Prabhupada sees at the ocean, he thinks of Krishna. But Lord Chaitanya looks at a mountain, he's looking at Govardhan. He runs towards Shatak Parvat with full speed. Because he's tuned so much into Krishna that when a simple sand dune excites, arouses emotions as if he's seeing Govardhan Hill. Or even the Arabian Sea, or the, you know, when he was in Puri, you're looking at the ocean, the Indian Ocean is there, and for him it is Jamuna. And suddenly in the middle of the night he goes into ecstasy and he's walking on the roads on the bank of the ocean, and he just jumps into the Jamuna. With his clothes on, he just jumps into the Jamuna, and he goes into a deep trance. Why? Because he remembers Krishna playing in the Jamuna. This is the This is, of course, the mood of a great enlightened, as you said, enlightened devotee, or a Mahabhagavat, or a great Vaishnava. Look at anything. Prabhupada used to give very simple examples, which we may not look at the ocean and remember Jamuna. That's for Mahaprabhu. But you see the spectacles lying and on the desk. You know, this is Prabhupada's spectacles. You look at the cane. This is Prabhupada's cane. Right? A mother looks at the garment. When a child dies, a young child, mother has lost a two-year-old baby in a dengue fever or accident, whatever. And then the mother does not go into the room of the child. She just cannot enter the room of the child. Because everything there reminds her of her child. His socks, his toys, his ring, his school bag. Everything is just a horrific experience of intense separation from her child who she has just lost. The child is not there, but this intense memory of the child is still strongly prevalent in the atmosphere by going to the child's room. So she just does not enter into the room. In fact, sometimes they change the flat itself. My neighbor, in a previous place I was staying, his child was 18 years old, and he had 18-year-old boy, can you imagine? And he had rectal cancer. Cancer in the rectum. It was very rare to have, you know, poor fellow, hardly was, you know, a Gujarati fellow. I don't think he was doing any, you know, mischief in his life. But, you know, he had got rectal cancer and he died. So they changed the flat. They sold the flat and went somewhere else. They couldn't stay in that flat because that flat reminded them of the loss of their dearest and the only child, only son they had. They changed the flat. Because the house would remind them of the child. Right? So in this way, they were so tuned into the child. So when we see when a devotee sees a flower, he thinks of Krishna. Why? Because Krishna has made that flower. And that is not hypothetical. That is not just a sentiment. That is not a belief system. It's a fact that Krishna made the flower. And who can challenge that? No man made it. No industry made it. It's Krishna who made it. Who can deny this? God made the flower. It's absolute truth. At most you can make, you know, a duplicate flower without the fragrance. You can make a flower also, yes. So many people make, you know, so many flowers are made. But the essence is not, the active principle of flower is the fragrance. Where is the fragrance in a flower? They can give texture, they can give looks, they can give color, they can give everything. But can they put fragrance in a flower? That is a challenge to modern man. Because Krishna is the fragrance in a flower. And that is the active principle, which is Krishna. And there is no Krishna in that man-made flower. It was made by man, out of his false ego. Right? So in this way, we need to just tune into our consciousness. We just train a consciousness to get tuned into Krishna. Then wherever we go, wherever, whatever we see, we will experience Krishna. Even when we are in hardships, in hard struggles, mishaps, crises, so many things, then we just have to understand, we have to tune into Krishna at that time even more. This is a small token of the karma which I deserve. I deserve even much more than this. But Krishna has given me just a small sample of my karma. And then when you are grateful in that condition as well for receiving that small token, Krishna, why are we grateful? Well, we got a small token. We are not just grateful. Ah, Krishna, thank you, you know. We are grateful because we got a small token. We are grateful because, you know, a huge mountain has been made into a small pebble of a karma. So we are grateful for that, for the construction in the size of the karma which is coming to me. We are grateful. Thank you, Krishna, for this. So when you tune into Krishna in all happiness, in distress, in fame and infamy, when you just tune into Krishna at all times, you are Krishna conscious. And that Krishna consciousness, which you're tuning, becomes like an armor. That armor prevents us from getting attracted or attacked by the distractions of Madana, which is the fantasy of this world. Otherwise, everything which is non-essential attracts us. A beautiful woman or unbeautiful woman, anything attracts us these days, you know. People get attracted to anything, mobile or clothes, lights, malls, attract, malls become very attractive, temples. Modern temples are malls. Everyone goes to worship, buy their paraphernalia. Malls have become like temples now. So we get attracted to all these things because we are being bombarded by this stimuli. So when you are tuned into Krishna, the stimuli still work upon you. You are still bombarded by the malls, by the so-called attractive features of this world. But because you're tuned into Krishna, you're experiencing a higher taste. You experience, because Krishna is the higher taste. That's a fact. So devotees, you know, the pure devotees also more on the same world as the karmis. But the karmis get attracted to the wrong things, and the devotees do not get attracted to the wrong things. Why? Because they're getting a higher taste. As simple as that. So how to tune our consciousness is the very basic and most important training of a sadhaka. How to tune into active principles in our chanting. It's not just a chanting. As active principle of chanting is a prayer for service. The active principle of making a garland of flower is a gratitude for Krishna's pleasure. So if we can tune our consciousness to this essential principles, our life will be successful. And then the essence of Krishna actually is Ladini Shakti. That is the essence of Krishna. He has external and internal potency. The essence of the internal potency is Ladini Shakti. So when we tune into essences, then the essence of Krishna, Ladini Shakti, will bless us with devotional service. So these are the few thought processes which can be indulged into. This is actually the purpose of philosophy. This is the purpose of philosophy. To bring philosophy which is so deep, so powerful, and use the philosophy to actually train and tune our consciousness to do the things we do in the world which we have to do. Our prescribed duties are active. We do everything, we don't change anything. Nothing really changes. We still cut vegetables and we still, cook the food and we still wear our dresses. We do everything, we do the same thing. But we do everything with a different sense of consciousness because it is tuned into a different frequency. The frequency of the Krishna channel, the Krishna station. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. So, anybody would like to ask any question, any comments? So thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.